The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you here on the final show of the week. Beautiful sunshiny day at Edstone. Also a very windy day. Sometimes we get a windy day. And there's the bird feeder from just a couple of hours ago tipping over because of the wind. So that's how windy it is. The birds came up on the footage I looked at just a couple minutes later. They got by the bird bath and were looking around and then flew off in a hurry. So lots of activity, as always, out the back window of my office. Actually, could you show that clip one more time, Sam? I think right after the bird feeder, there's actually a mattress behind the bird feeder and a chair that's tipped over. So someone evidently is sleeping out on the back porch. We'll see. We'll investigate that later. I'm surprised you didn't get some nice slow motion, dramatic music. I actually had him pull that clip just 5 minutes ago, so that's the best we can do with our special effects for today. Well, coming up on today's program, I've probably got enough material here for two programs, so we'll have to hurry. I want to get into the unconstitutional crackdown in Australia. We've had some material that's been piling up here for the last few days, and I want to update you on the last day of the Democratic convention last night as well. I'll do that here in just a moment, but hopefully we'll get to the Australian material because some really disturbing things happening down there with all the lockdowns, even between states, and it's affecting a lot of our people too as they prepare for the fall festival, the Feast of Tabernacles. If we have time after that, I'll hopefully look into the Bible to see what God has to say about just the arrogance and the pride of so many of our leaders today. We see, as we've seen in recent months, the experts pretty much taking control, and look at how many times they've gotten it wrong. I'll just start with one email that comes in response to the program, the one yesterday. It says, "Thank you, Trumpet Daily, for monitoring the Democratic convention. I just couldn't watch more than a couple of minutes. Too cringeworthy and mind-numbing." So we have made the sacrifice. Our news gatherers, they're not watching it from start to finish either. But we are able to see some clips the day after. That puts us at an advantage. The time difference, we can get up in the morning after it's already played and just get some of the highlights from some of our favorite websites. Of course, we can also hurry through transcripts as well, which makes the process just a little bit easier. But from what we read this morning, there was another... I should preface this by saying what we read or saw in the mainstream news is that there was another incredible, soaring speech. A real triumph. This was Joe Biden's finest hour, his best speech ever. He's been in politics for almost 50 years, I believe. And this was his finest moment. These were the reports coming in from the major news. He was giving hope. Hope to a dying nation. But listen to this. This is Van Jones, the commentator, I believe on CNN, one of the two. But here he is last night after Joe Biden had completed his speech. Clip one.
And that sound that you hear all across the country is the sound of Democrats exhaling. That's what that is. People would have accepted anything. We just wanted Joe to get out there. So, you know, sometimes when he gets out there, you're afraid he's going to make a mistake. He's going to have a gaffe. The set expectations are just so low.
The expectations are so low. They set the bar so low that if he comes out and he gives a clean reading on the teleprompter for 20 minutes, they're just ecstatic. And that's the way that they reacted last night. And from the bits I saw, it seems like it was a pretty clean reading from the teleprompter. As far as content, here again, not a lot on policy. Little or nothing was said about China, the threat that China poses. And then again, nothing on upholding law and order in the streets of America. Yet, like the other speakers this past week, plenty of support for the rioters, plenty of support for all the protesters that are destroying some of the cities of the United States. Remember what Barack Obama had said the night before Mr. Biden gave this speech. Here's clip six.
To the young people who led us this summer, telling us we need to be better, in so many ways, you are this country's dreams fulfilled.
Dreams fulfilled, these young people, the ones who led us this summer. If you follow Andy Ngo's Twitter feed, this reporter that actually shows us what's happening on the streets of Portland and elsewhere, there's quite a few of them. He'll put up the mugshots. These are the ones that are leading the way and smashing and burning and killing. These are the ones leading the way and knocking people unconscious. And some of them have these rap sheets that just go on and on. So many of them leading the way. That's Barack Obama saying the young people who led us this summer. And who are leading the rioters? Well, common criminals and thugs. That's who. And they're still hunting for the man that kicked the other man who was sitting down on the street. He kicked him in the face from behind and knocked him out. They're still hunting for the perpetrator. I understand he's on social media trying to get people to give him money, and I bet he has plenty of Hollywood celebrities that will take him up on that. Well, we've got to help him. He's the victim. The police are the problem. Well, he can, you know, he had to pull that guy out of his truck and then kick him unconscious. That's the upside down world of the radical left. Here's Barack Obama saying that the young people this summer, they're the leaders. What does it say in Isaiah 3? It says the children oppress. They're not leading, they're oppressing. Well, the adults, they're certainly not leading either, are they? Very sad to see this. Here's what Joe Biden had to say about these young people who are leading the nation the way Barack Obama sees it. Clip two.
One of the most powerful voices we hear in the country today is from our young people. They're speaking to the inequity and injustice that has grown up in America. Economic injustice, racial injustice, environmental injustice. I hear their voices. If you listen, you can hear them too. And whether it's the existential threat posed by climate change, the daily fear of being gunned down in school, or the inability to get started in your first job, it will be the work of the next president to restore the promise of America to everyone.
So the young people, he says, they're speaking to the inequity, the injustice that has grown up in America. I didn't have time to research some of the things he said in previous campaigns, but I venture to say he probably never spoke like this. He has been taken over by the radical left. He's right on board with the racism being in the DNA. We've grown up with this. It's unfair. That's Bernie Sanders. That's Barack Obama. That's AOC. It's in our blood. It's been there since we were little children. Even before that. And even as they praise these protesters, they say little or nothing about restoring law and order to the streets of America. Real Clear Politics. It says the Democrats bend their reality toward a referendum on President Donald Trump's handling of the coronavirus, but they bend it away from any mention of growing violence in American big cities run by liberal Democratic administrations. See, well, in this guy's view, they're ignoring it, but it's not even that. It's worse than that, really. It's not that they're ignoring the violence. I guess in one sense you can say that because they're saying it's not violent, it's peaceful. But they're not ignoring it in the sense that, as you've heard from these clips, they're tacitly approving of it. In some cases, openly encouraging it. All of this civil unrest, We need it, as one U.S. representative said, because of the unrest in our hearts. Listen again to what President Obama had to say. Here is, just keep in mind, here is all this civil unrest, and it's tearing apart the cities of the United States. And yet Barack Obama says it's Donald Trump who's tearing things apart. This is clip three.
This administration has shown it will tear our democracy down if that's what it takes for them to win.
Now, this is the same man who used the bureaucratic deep state to try to overturn the results from the 2016 election. This is the same man who said that that old constitution, you know, that document, that founding document, it's getting in the way. It prevents him from getting things done. They're getting desperate. The tone all week long, perhaps it was a bit more upbeat and positive with Joe Biden, but still the attacks on Donald Trump, that's the platform. And they're getting desperate. And they know that time is running out. My wife, in listening to yesterday's program, she just said how striking it was to hear Barack Obama and to compare it to things that he said. We even had some clips from back in 2016 when he talked about the smooth transition. You know, we're here to help. We're going to bring, that's what America, it's enshrined in our Constitution. This smooth transition from one president to the next. Early on, you see, it was smooth-sounding words. Early on, it was, hey, we're just bringing the country together. And, of course, all along the way, we were saying, look at the fruits. Look at what they're actually doing. Look at the actions. But then this week at the Democratic National Convention, as I said yesterday, the gloves came off. These are angry Democrats. These are desperate radical leftists. These are individuals representing this Marxist infiltration that know it's time for war. It's time for anger and defiance. Well, the young people have led us in that to the streets anyway. But do you think there's a special sense of urgency, particularly with Barack Obama? Even Joe Biden, he was right there as vice president. He was right there saying, hey, why don't we use the Logan Act to go after General Flynn? Donald Trump is exposing them, and that's perhaps why they're the most urgent and angry of all, because they know that if he gets reelected, Bill Barr and John Durham don't go away. If, on the other hand, Joe Biden gets the position, all of that will just drift down the all of those investigations into the investigators, they'll just drift down the stream like bubbles and disappear. Oh, yes. They're being exposed. President Trump, by the way, I don't know what the count is at the moment, but he released this video yesterday. I won't play all of it for you, but it's basically how we've the radical left has sold out to China. And it's this two-minute clip. It had 7.7 million views as of this morning. And then over the course of an hour, I think it was 400,000 more views. It's up over 8 million views. And that's through the night. In the United States, anyway, people are just waking up over there. We were watching the video count or the viewer count and just shaking our heads. Look at this campaign video from the Trump campaign, clip 7.
After the steel mills fell, it just all crumbled. I'm third generation. I've worked at the steel mill for a year and a half. And now the steel mill ain't even there.
This is just the way of the world. China is an economic rival to the United States. It does export, it does manufacture, and yes, it takes American jobs.
We want to see China rise. China is going to eat our lunch. Come on, man. I mean, they're not bad folks.
I believe then, and I'm even more convinced now, that a rising China is an incredibly positive development. China has made remarkable strides.
ABC News investigation this morning into Joe Biden's son, Hunter, and questions about money he made from foreign business dealings while his father was vice president.
And did Joe Biden allow it? We're talking about millions of dollars in at least two countries.
Did you talk about China or your deal with China?
No.
A 12-hour flight over?
No, of course not.
That never came up.
No. Less than 2 weeks after that trip, BHR Partners was launched, a private equity firm funded in part by Chinese banks.
He has come forward and said it was a mistake on his part to be on the board.
My son's business dealings were not anything with everybody that he's talking about.
What's your understanding of what your son was doing for an extraordinary amount of money?
I don't know what he was doing. I know he was on the board.
Hunter Biden holds an equity stake in a company that's taken over $1.5 billion in loans from the Chinese government. This is obviously an issue.
Obviously. I mean, that's just devastating. And everything you saw and heard right there, if Hillary Clinton were president of the United States right now, you would hear none of that. None of it. What is it that President Trump keeps saying? China's eating our lunch. We've been getting ripped off for decades, and no one stands up to them. You can see why the Biden family hasn't stood up to them, because they've raked in billions. You heard earlier this week, Barack Obama said, look, you know, it's the Trump family they're trying to enrich themselves with this office. Where would Barack Obama, worth $200 million, and then who knows how many hundreds of millions the Biden family's worth, where would they be without the political positions they've had for decades? These are men that have done nothing outside of the political sphere. All that they've accumulated, it's come as a result of their positions of power and influence in politics. Now, if you thought the deep state had a lot riding on the 2016 election, everything is riding on this one. Because like I say, Bill Barr and John Durham, they don't go away if President Trump gets reelected. Now, I'm not saying I know exactly what Durham's going to uncover or expose or go after or who he's going to indict or who ends up going to jail because of all of this illegal, lawless behavior. But you can be sure it's getting a little too close for comfort. So you've heard this week from the angry and desperate Democrats. That has been the tone. Rabidly anti-Trump. That's the platform. Here's Joe Biden yesterday trying to, again, pin the blame for all that has happened this year to put it on Donald Trump's shoulders, in particular, the pandemic and everything that has happened because of it. Clip 4.
And now history has delivered us to one of the most difficult moments America has ever faced. Four historic crises, all at the same time. A perfect storm. The worst pandemic in over 100 years. The worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. The most compelling call for racial justice since the 60s. And the undeniable realities and just the accelerating threats of climate change.
Okay, leave aside climate change. I mean, that's always been on their playbook. But those first three, the pandemic, we'll talk more about how that this has been politicized from the beginning. And then the lockdown that brought on the economic crisis, the lockdown that the radical left just insisted upon from the beginning. And then the call for racial justice. And you think of the role that the media has played in that. And of course, it's all Donald Trump's fault. Starting with the pandemic, it came over the horizon and they thought, well, this would be an easy one to politicize because it is, at least it's real. It's not a conspiracy. And so they took it and they ran with it. Did they ever? Kamala Harris said this week, Donald Trump's failure of leadership has cost lives. And Barack Obama took it a step further. 170,000 Americans dead. He puts that on Donald Trump's shoulders. Donald Trump is responsible for killing 170,000 Americans. Donald Trump is responsible for this bad flu. He's responsible for the flu. You didn't hear that in 2009 with the swine flu, when there was something like 1,300 children that died from that. Children. And then the way they botched the vaccines, getting those out in the fall of 2009, people waiting in line. We played the clips before. This is, again, Joe Biden yesterday talking about this mandate He's taking the mask mandate even further. Clip 5.
We'll have a national mandate to wear a mask, not as a burden, but as a patriotic duty to protect one another. In short, we'll do what we should have done from the very beginning. Our current president has failed in his most basic duty to the nation. He's failed to protect us. He's failed to protect America. And my fellow Americans, that is unforgivable.
That's unforgivable. He's failed to protect us. He's responsible for the virus. Kim Strassel has a piece at the Wall Street Journal asking if it's reasonable. You think, again, they've got to convince 70 million Americans, remember. Is it reasonable to blame one politician for the spread of a highly infectious virus, a virus that's gone right around the world? Is it reasonable to blame that on Donald Trump? She mentions in her piece how that the Biden people have been putting the Ebola example, I think that's 2014 out there. They've been using that example to divert attention away from something they really did botch, the swine flu, in 2009. It said H1N1, that's the swine flu, began like corona with panic stories in late April 2009. And again, it was this unique strain of the flu. Strassel says later, within days, some 30 states had suspected cases. Well, so she's talking about the spread of it. She said the Obama administration still had no idea how deadly the disease was, though the World Health Organization called the outbreak a threat to all humanity, and health experts predicted hospitals would be overloaded. So there are lots of similarities. Now, in the end, 500,000 people died from the swine flu worldwide. It wasn't as devastating in the United States. I forget the figures, maybe 60 to 70,000, and they're putting 177, I think it is, on coronavirus right now. So coronavirus is worse, but it is different. It's killed more elderly with comorbidities. Children are really free and clear from this. They are not in danger, and you don't hear enough commentators bringing out that basic point. Meaning that they ought to be able to go back to their sports and music lessons and those things. School, for sure. It says the administration nonetheless took a resigned approach to its spread. That's the Obama administration in 2009. Mr. Obama didn't close the Mexican border, saying it would be akin to closing the barn doors after the horses are out. That's what Barack Obama said in 2009. Well, you can't close the borders. You can't do something that extreme. It says further on, his officials did declare a health emergency and distributed the national stockpile, which they never replenished. The administration recommended schools consider closing if experiencing an outbreak, though the CDC and prevention chief said this might not help with spread and warned about taking kids out of classrooms. So they didn't take them out of classrooms then. And how many children died of that? At least 1,300. I think I've played the clip before. 1,300 children died of the flu in 2009. No one considered a national lockdown, especially not an administration focused on a fragile economic recovery. It said Mr. Obama promised to control the impact of the virus, not the virus itself. He promised to control the impact. He said closing down the borders, that's like closing the barn doors after the animals are already out. That was his approach then. Now, well, it's all Donald Trump's fault. Oh yes, he's killed 170,000. And here they are trying to divert our attention, focusing on Ebola, which was not as infectious as either of these two, coronavirus or swine flu. And here that happened on Barack Obama's and Vice President Biden's watch. 500,000 deaths worldwide. Joe Biden said this is the worst pandemic in more than 100 years, which isn't even true, factually. The Spanish flu of 1918, it killed 50 million people worldwide, and something like 675,000 Americans. And the population then, about a third, I think, a third of what it is today. 50 million died around the world because of the Spanish flu 102 years ago? Even the Asian flu of 1957. I don't have the facts on how many Americans died, but somewhere between 1 and 2 million people died worldwide. 1 and 2 million. So that's still a good ways ahead of coronavirus. That's 1957. The Hong Kong flu of 1968, 4 million people worldwide. If you scale up the population from 1958 or 68 to what it is today, the equivalent would be 4 million deaths. Coronavirus, I think it's still under 800,000. And then, of course, you have the swine flu of 2009, 500,000 worldwide. But this time around, and this makes this pandemic very, very different, you see the worldwide political exploitation of this virus, a total lockdown. We've got mandatory mask wearing. We've got economies screeching to a halt. We've got the entire city of Auckland, New Zealand, in lockdown, or it was for a few days, because of four cases of the Wuhan flu. One of these days, if I get a few extra moments, I'm going to go back and at least look at my notes, or perhaps listen to some of those shows from March and April of this year, where we were talking about how this is being politicized, even at the height of the hysteria. We were telling you how that this danger, as real as it was being exaggerated on a massive scale. People weren't being told that the vulnerable group are elderly people with comorbidities. And then the lockdown, when that came along, you know, it was supposed to be 15 days. Where are we into it now? Is it something like 150, 200 days? Well, the lockdown's been eased in a lot of places in the U.S., but you look at places like Australia, it's just unbelievable what's happening. It's hard to believe. You would think it's the Chinese communist state running the government, at least in some of those Australian states like Victoria. We were telling you back in March and April that, look, the lockdown is going to make matters worse. It doesn't help when you tell everyone to shut it down. It doesn't help when you have to shut down everyone's livelihood. That brings with it a whole host of new problems. The cure, worse than the disease. And what other program was out there, by the way, telling you about the laws of radiant health? If these comorbidities put you in danger, if they make you more vulnerable, then if you want to talk about dealing with root causes, forget about the Wuhan flu for a moment. What about our overall health in general? And then going back to the lockdown, here again, go back to March and April. Listen to our programs from a few months ago. And we told you, with that cure worse than the disease, when government grabs hold of power, they're not going to be inclined to let go of it. And what we're seeing today, what we're seeing all over the world, and even in Israelite nations, is governments drunk on power. We talked back then about vaccines, and we said, how much longer is it going to be before it's mandatory? This from CNN, I think on Wednesday. Massachusetts will require all school children to get influenza vaccines to stay enrolled in public schools and daycares. The mandate makes it the first state to require flu shots for children over the age of 5. So not just the one-time shots for polio and whatever else. Now it's every year, every season, you've got to send your 5-year-old. If you're living in Massachusetts, thankfully there's still a little wiggle room for religious exemptions. But this is in the United States of America. These are leaders that have just gone mad in their grab for power. They want to control you. Now, if it's abortion, they're not going to get anywhere near that woman's body. That's her decision. Even though there's another life inside of her womb, she can do whatever she wants. And yet here is a government mandate saying, we're going to do what we want to your child, your 5-year-old, your 10-year-old. This is no longer the parents' responsibility. And of course, it's got the full support of the radical left. Jim Sciutto at CNN, he said earlier this week, barely half the country is now willing to take a coronavirus vaccine. The attack on science has consequences. Well, he can't understand it. This has consequences. We've got to get the other half on board. This is where we need big, strong, authoritarian government to impose its will. You get the vaccine. If you don't get it, you're going to kill someone. That's the thinking. That's the thinking behind the mandatory mask wearing. It's the same thinking. Bill Gates was quoted in Fox News. Well, I guess the interview was with, I think it was The Economist. They asked him why. Well, he's praising China. Oh, China's done great. This is Bill Gates, the billionaire. He's really into vaccines now. And then when it came along and he found out or discovered that the U.S. was going to lock, he was just giddy. This is great. I wish we had time to prepare for this. He's so happy. And then in this interview, the lady says, why is it that the U.S. hasn't done as good as other nations? Listen to this exchange, clip 16.
Now let's turn to the U.S. because it's the country, it's the world's biggest economy. It's the preeminent public health country in the world. It's got the world's best epidemiologists. I mean, why has it done so badly?
Well, we believe in freedom, individual freedom. We optimize for individual rights.
Hopefully you got to see that. Just see his expression, his smile. We believe in freedom. Well, this is why we've done so bad, frankly, because we optimize individual rights. You see that? Boy, that old Constitution, it prevents us from doing what we need to. If only we could get rid of the Constitution. If only we could get rid of the liberties enshrined in the Constitution and the Declaration. Then we might really rise to the level of effectiveness of the Chinese communist state. It was Tucker Carlson earlier this month, remember, talking about how for years we knew, you saw from that China video that the Trump administration put out. We knew that our leaders were bowing before the Chinese government. We knew that they were selling out the United States and its future for money, just like the Biden family. But as Tucker pointed out, we never imagined that they actually admired the Chinese system. They admired it. They still do. We admire that authoritarian regime. Tyranny. This is from Bloomberg last weekend. It says, flare-ups from Australia to Japan show the world hasn't learned an early lesson from the coronavirus crisis. To stop the spread, those with mild or symptom-free coronavirus infections must be forced to isolate, both from their communities and family. This is Bloomberg. They must be forced. This is like you would read this from a Chinese propaganda outlet. It says further, but lessons from Italy, South Korea, and others have successfully contained large-scale outbreaks show that there's a tried and tested approach to cutting off transmission. Move them out of their homes into centralized facilities while they get over their infection, which usually doesn't require longer than just a few weeks. No, just take them out of their home, force them. Put them into a government-controlled institution, a camp, so to speak. They can have dance lessons in there probably, but just put them in the camp, and it's not going to take more than 3 weeks. 3 weeks! That sounds reasonable to Bloomberg, and it uses New Zealand as a positive example. New Zealand has quickly enacted this strategy, placing 17 people, including 2 children below the age of 10, into centralized quarantine. New Zealand has had 22 total deaths over the course of this 5-6 month pandemic. 22. And they're led by a radical leftist. And if she hears that there's 4 infections, lock it down. She's putting the army at the borders. That's leadership in an Israelite nation, New Zealand, and Australia, particularly in Victoria. They're not that far behind. Another radical leftist serving as the premier in Victoria. It says further on, But other countries facing sustained spread, like Australia and the U.S., are not broadly enacting the policy despite its proven track record. Their unwillingness or inability to do so underscores the challenges faced by liberal democracies whose populations are less likely to tolerate measures that require individual sacrifice for the greater good. See, if you're healthy, if there's nothing wrong with you, you've got a job, you're making a living, you're paying taxes, you've got to make a sacrifice for the greater good. In other words, shut it down. Everything gets locked down. It's got to happen. It says, beyond household spread, the strategy is necessitated by a facet of human nature that's been seen time and again across countries and cultures. Left to their own devices, some people just won't follow the rules. Now they're concerned about the rules. All of this lawlessness. If you go into the streets and you smash up windows, let it go, okay? Let it go. It's justice, all right? But masks, you better put it on. And human nature being what it is, we're going to have to really crack down. We're going to have to fine you. Now they're experts on human nature. All of this lawlessness, all of this filth that our nations produce year in and year out, all of the evil, violent influence on the internet, just free reign. It's distributed as far as we can possibly take it. No restrictions, no rules. Now all of a sudden they're concerned about rules. These radical left-wing politicians. It says, in Australia and Japan, infected people who've been told to stay home have gone out for a variety of reasons. Well, imagine that. It says some can't work from home and need the income while others want to pick up groceries and supplies. Well, shame on them. You mean they have to feed themselves and actually provide for their families? What are they thinking? That's from not a Chinese propagandist publication. That's from Bloomberg. Wishing we could only be more authoritarian, our leaders. You look at Australia, as I say, and it's not that far behind. Now, it does have a more conservative government at the top, but there may be some similarities. I'm not quite, some of our Australian listeners will have to fill me in, I suppose. But there may be some similarities to what President Trump is contending with all these blue state leaders, these radical left-wing leaders, like many of the premiers down in Australia. But still, Sky News Australia has been pretty strong in wondering why Prime Minister Morrison hasn't come out stronger against this radicalism. Even he, this week, he talked about a vaccine and how it should be mandatory. And then the next day, he had to walk that back a bit. Well, there are freedoms, I guess, and you don't want to make the decision. Think of it. How many of us know what they put into these vaccines? The government has been wrong, has it not? Have the experts ever been wrong? Are the experts ever wrong with a vaccine? Could it actually cause more harm than good? Well, if it's mandatory, you don't have any say in the matter. Who cares what kind of drug they make? You just have to put it in your body, and you have to even put it in your five-year-old. That's the direction that they're heading in. At least he walked it back a little bit the next day. This is from Steve Watterson's piece at the Weekend Australian. It says here, worldwide, excess deaths from COVID-19, generously assuming every victim died from rather than just with the virus, are around 700,000. He wrote this a few days ago. It says, given the roughly 60 million deaths the world records each year, it's as though 2020 had 369 days in it rather than 366. So that's the surplus. An additional 700,000 deaths on top of 60 million deaths per year. Okay, so like I've pointed out before, there are a lot of people on Earth dying every day, every week, every year. It says here, if that thought chills you, those 700,000 excess deaths, He says, if that thought chills you, congratulations, a lavishly pensioned, undemanding, and unaccountable career in politics beckons. Well, you might just have a career, you might be a shining star in politics. If you are an alarmist, if you are a scaremonger, if you are lazy and not willing to do much research. It says cases, as a moment's reflection reveals, do not equal sick. He's talking about cases. That's what we hear, right? Cases, cases, cases. First, it was the deaths. Now that's in decline. So it's cases. It's not even hospitalizations. We're not hearing about ventilators. We're not hearing about deaths. We're not hearing about hospitalizations. There's no shortage of beds. But what we do hear is cases. And in the case of Auckland, there were 4 cases. Lock it down. You got to lock it down. It's not about stopping it's not even about flattening the curve. It's about just eliminating this flu entirely. It says, until we are entrusted with the knowledge of how many are the results of tests on people who show no symptoms, they serve only to strike terror into the innumerate. Indeed, why do we need to hear these figures at all? We don't get daily updates for any other diseases. Do we get the daily updates of how many deaths? There are other infectious diseases, by the way. It says their primary purpose seems to be post-rationalize our leaders' devastating, simple-minded lockdowns and border closures and to panic people into sporting their masks of obedience should they be sufficiently reckless as to leave their homes. Listen to this report from an Australian news station. I think it was down near Sydney. This is clip 8.
Police are preparing to launch their aerial arsenal as part of a crackdown on COVID rule breakers. High-powered drones will be used to find people not wearing masks and cars too far from home.
Sky-high surveillance as we battle to control COVID. Over the next week, Victoria Police will dispatch drones. They'll be keeping a watch on St Kilda and Port Melbourne Beach, making sure skate parks and playgrounds remain empty. Police have also been using drones to guard the New South Wales border. There are concerns this style of policing won't end when the pandemic is over.
Yeah, there are concerns that they're just going to keep right on doing this. You think they're going to relinquish that power? This new power that they have, George Orwell said, no one ever seizes power with the intention of relinquishing it. Now, you talk about human nature. Let's talk about it. They are expanding their powers. This is a clip from Sky News Australia, Alan Jones, again, talking about the steps being taken, particularly in Victoria, clip 9.
And just on Victoria, we're looking more like North Korea every day. We learned that a week before Easter, that long weekend, Victorian authorities asked the Defence Force, do you mind, for aerial support, military spy planes to identify illegal public gatherings so that the police could be sent to dish out fines. The Defence Force sensibly rejected the request.
This is Melbourne, Australia. Not Wuhan, not Moscow, not North Korea. This is Australia. The leadership there calling the defense force. I guess drones aren't enough. We got to get the army involved. Now, the premier there in Victoria, Daniel Andrews, he's claimed that he knew nothing about this. There was an example, speaking of this show, Alan Jones. A couple nights ago, he talked about this Australian farmer. He owns property in Victoria and in, I forget the state just above it. But in any event, it spans across 2 provinces, all right? And he wants to take hay to the northern province to feed his animals. And the authorities in Victoria said, you've got to deliver them to an airport, ship it across like a couple thousand kilometers, something like that, then put the hay in quarantine before he then gives it to his animal. It's just insane. This is a farmer with New South Wales. That's what it is. So listen to, again, Alan Jones. This was in the segment, I believe, where he talked about what this farmer was having to go through. The whole thing would have cost something like $50,000 just to feed his animals. And he lives in a remote location. But because they've had a spike in cases, right? Cases. Everything's got to be shut down. And you can't even go across the border if you own property over there to feed your animals. Or if you do, you've got to do it in this way that some health expert somewhere decides, well, okay, this would be appropriate. You can do it this way. Well, that's $50,000. Well, that's your only option. Here's what Alan Jones said on Sky News, clip 10.
Look, just take border closures to start with. You are not going to believe this, but last night I told you when we spoke to Steve on the Gold Coast about the economic and emotional ruin that these unconstitutional border closures are delivering. Businesses and individuals destroyed. There's no mandate for any of this. Clive Palmer alone is seeking to test the unconstitutionality of these border closures, but the damage is done. On these things, we're no better than North Korea, living under the Australian version of martial law.
The Australian version of martial law. There is a glimmer of hope, and he says some people are beginning to wake up to what's happening. There was even, I think, a victory for those who enjoy freedom and liberty in New Zealand with what this left-wing leader over there is imposing on her people. It's not constitutional. And here's Alan Jones saying, this isn't these border closings, that's not constitutional either. You would think there'd be more people challenging them, even in court. Here's another bit from Mr. Jones, clip 11.
Chris, it's no consolation. I'm just telling you we're being run by arrogant morons, politicians and bureaucrats.
So language maybe we wouldn't go quite as strongly with on this program, but the incompetent leadership, that's prophesied as I've been covering this week. Isaiah 3. If I have time, I'll get into a few verses in Isaiah 2 here in just a moment. But there is someone that's saying, look, it's not constitutional. Can we at least look at the law on this? This is Australia, after all. It's not North Korea. Back to this piece at the Weekend Australian. Steve Watterson says, maybe for context, they could dilute their irresponsible scaremongering by including details of the other 450 people who die in Australia each day, including the victims of lockdown, the suicides, and those who, too frightened to visit a doctor or hospital, are dying avoidable deaths through lack of screening and treatment. So people die. 450 people in Australia die every day. Maybe we could get some context here. Is that too much to ask? It says further, here's where our politicians find themselves unable to admit their response to the virus. The ultimate blunt instrument of lockdown, brutally enforced, hasn't worked and will never work. See, he's getting to a point here saying that they're so far along into this that they can't admit they're wrong. They won't. That's the last thing they'll do. And so instead of roll it back, instead of going to the public and saying, you know what, we might have done it wrong, so we're going to do it this way now. Instead, they go farther into this. They scare you even more. Says they can't do so because it would mean all that they've done up to this point has been in vain. How could anyone who had wreaked damage on this cataclysmic scale ever admit to themselves, let alone to the nation, that it was all for nothing? Instead, like the pokey addict, they have doubled down to unleash a runaway epidemic of stupidity. They've destroyed our economy and put thousands out of work. They've refashioned many of our famously easygoing population into masked informers. Everybody's telling on each other now, just like in Wuhan. And we've handed control of our lives to a clown car packed with idiots. Here again, some strong language coming from this column and Mr. Jones on Sky News Australia. Perhaps some people are beginning to listen and wake up to what's happening. It says, would it not have been far better to spend a smaller but still significant sum? He talks about the hundreds of billions spent to impose this lockdown. Wouldn't it have been better to spend a smaller sum on protecting and caring for the vulnerable and elderly to the very best of our abilities, and then, crucially, offering them the choice whether to accept that care? We could allow them, like sentient adults, to make a simple calculation Do I live a little longer in safe but miserable isolation, or do I spend my remaining days at some risk but embraced by the warmth of family and friends? That's not a decision for any politician, he writes. Even a wise one to make. It's a matter of choice for the individual, or if incapacitated, for those responsible for them. Governments don't exist to tell us how or when we can die. But if life is measured only by length, not quality, this is where we end up, imprisoned, supposedly for our own good, on the basis of flawed statistical modeling and even worse interpretations of that modeling. He talks about the hope that we're pinning on a vaccine and mentions that we still, 40 years on, have no vaccine for HIV/AIDS. And that, in case anyone needs reminding, is something that kills 2,600 people per day. HIV, AIDS. 2,600 people die of it every day, all over the world. It's been happening for 40 years. No lockdown. No scaremongering, at least not now. Maybe there was in the very, very, very early stages. Well, I don't have time to play a few more clips, but Alan Jones talks about how that there's currently 630 Australians in hospital. That's hardly a shortage of beds. 630 in a nation of, I think, 22, 23 million. 630. He mentioned earlier, 440 Australians die every day. I think that was in the article I just gave to you. So if you go back to the first corona death from, I think, 207 days ago, 91,000 people have died in Australia since January 25th. 91,000. How many have died of coronavirus? I think it's, I had it on one of my margins, I think it's 460, 470. So that means for every 202 deaths in Australia, one of them, and this is assuming that they're not dying with corona as opposed to of corona, of the 202 deaths, or out of every 202 deaths, one person dies of coronavirus. And that's the reason that we have to have these strict draconian measures. Let me just take you through a few scriptures here in conclusion. Isaiah 2. We often talk about Isaiah 3. When you want to talk about a crisis in leadership, Isaiah 3 is the go-to chapter. It describes an upside down family where women rule and children oppress and fathers are not mentioned. But look at the last 12 verses of chapter 2 sometime. This gives us some important context for Isaiah 3. Verse 17 of Isaiah 2 says, "And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the eternal alone shall be exalted in that day." This is why there's a crisis in leadership. It's because of man's haughtiness. It's because of our arrogance. It's because of our vanity and our pride. Backing up to verse 11, it says, "The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day." You see, God hates a lofty heart. This was Lucifer's problem from the very beginning. He was filled with pride. He felt like he knew more than God. And you listen to some of the experts today, they see themselves as God. They see themselves in control. They're drunk on power, and they want to expand that power, not roll it back, not pull back from it. Verse 18 says, "And the idols he shall utterly abolish, and they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the eternal and for the glory of his majesty, when he arises to shake terribly the earth. God's coming to shake this earth, to wake us up. And yet look at how vain and arrogant we are, and just the lack of common sense and the stupidity, the lack of judgment, like in the case of this poor farmer just trying to get across the border to feed his animals. It says in verse 20, "In that day a man shall cast his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made each one for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to go into the clefts of the rocks." Well, they'll try to run from this correction, but it's going to touch every corner of this earth. And God says at the end of this chapter, verse 22, "Cease you from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of?" That's the source of our problems today. This is the reason there's a crisis in leadership, is because we're trusting in ourselves and not in God or his laws. We're exalting ourselves and not God. The loftiness of man is what we promote instead of God, his authority, his laws, and his instruction. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you know the address, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you Monday.